and Americans for the Arts.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the big items in the news. And we're also going to hear some free candidate messages. We have promised local candidates who are on the ballot in the six counties that WMNF serves that we're going to give free airtime to them. So we're going to hear some more candidates' messages today. First, one listener commented about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we had a scientist on who was talking about the link between red tide and fertilizer runoff from the land here in Florida. Here's what one listener had to say following yesterday's show.
Hi, I heard on the program today that there was a summer ban in the area on fertilizer application, and I just wanted to make a correction to that because it's a lot of people seem to think that almost all of Pinellas County communities have a fertilizer ban, and in South Florida, over 80 communities and or counties do have that ban. But I'm Louise, and as a member of the Conservation Committee for Sierra Club, we were working for all of 2015 and 2016 on trying to get a ban in Hillsborough County. And we met with a lot of resistance. We also tried to get one for Temple Terrace, and we were not successful. We worked pretty hard. We were actually told that there would never be one in Hillsborough. There is a ban for fertilizer application in the city of Tampa, but not for Hillsborough County. There is a ban in like Largo, Gulfport, Dunedin, just everywhere. And while we really, really need one, it would be very, very important. It isn't so. And it would be nice if people do not apply fertilizer, of course, in the summer. Thank you.
Well, there's a listener comment that came in after yesterday's program. Well, as you know, as a public service, WMNF is offering free airtime for political candidates. We're giving up to 2 minutes of free airtime for a message recorded by the candidates themselves. The message may include anything the candidate would like to say about why they should be elected to office. The candidate may also include contact information. This offer is open to any political candidate, regardless of party, who's running statewide or locally, and who's on the ballot on August 28th in Hillsborough, Pinellas, Sarasota, Pasco, Polk, or Manatee counties. Candidates may record their messages right now at 813-238-8001, extension 115. We'll be playing the messages back during the 11 a.m. hour during the next few days. We're going to hear from four more candidates today. First, a candidate who's running for Congress, and this congressional seat includes portions of both Polk County and Hillsborough County.
Hi, this is Kristen Carlson. I'm running for Congress in District 15. I live in Lakeland, where I've raised my children and where I've been an active member of my community for many years, like working with the Boys and Girls Clubs, the Girl Scouts, and the Polk Museum of Art. I have practiced law in the Tampa Bay area for 38 years, serving as a prosecutor, a citrus industry regulator, a chief counsel to the Florida Department of Transportation, and a litigator in private practice. I know this district, and I know the challenges of our communities. I have years of experience solving problems and cleaning up corruption. Don't be fooled. Experience counts. And I bring a proven track record to protect what the people in District 15 want me to protect, starting day one. Affordable health care, Social Security and Medicare, and good public education for our children. We need to begin the hard work of preparing this state for rising sea levels, and I will fight to do that and to enact common sense gun reforms. Our country is at a crossroads. Our institutions and civil rights appear to be unraveling before our eyes. Our president is using fear and hatred to divide us, and Congress has been more focused on partisan politics than helping Americans. I have tried to make Florida a better place. I will use the same approach in Washington. I am Kristen Carlson, and I'm running for Congress. I would appreciate your vote.
Well, that was Kristen Carlson. She's running for District 15, and she's a Democrat running in that race for Congress. That district includes parts of Hillsborough and parts of Pinellas County. And you're listening to Free Candidate Airtime here on WMNF in Tampa. We've got three more candidates who took us up on our offer of giving them free airtime. The next candidate is running for a Pinellas school board seat.
My name is Jeff Larson, and I am your candidate for Pinellas County School Board District 2. District 2 is a countywide seat. If you live in Pinellas County, I am on your ballot. This race is nonpartisan. You don't have to be in a political party to vote in the school board races. I'm happy to tell you who I am and why I'm running. I'm a teacher. I'm now in my 15th year as a public school classroom teacher. I'm a parent. I have two sons that are currently attending Pinellas schools. I'm also a former elected official. I served two terms as a city commissioner and later vice mayor in Tarpon Springs. Now, I'm excited to use my experiences and my perspectives as an educator, as a parent, and as an elected official to help move our school district in a positive direction. The reason that I'm running is simple. I believe that we can do better. Better for our students, better for our parents, better for our educators, and better for the whole community. I will advocate for our students by shifting our focus from testing to learning and by expanding our trade school and pre-apprenticeship opportunities. I will stand up for our parents by improving our communication systems. We must increase transparency and accessibility of information. I will fight to improve the workplace climate for our educators. Morale is low, and many great teachers are looking to leave. I am proud of how the community has rallied around my campaign. I have been endorsed by the Tampa Bay Times, the Pinellas County Teachers Association, the Suncoast Police Benevolent Association, the National Organization for Women, and many, many more organizations and local leaders. To learn more, please visit VoteJeffLarson.com. Again, my name is Jeff Larson, and I'm asking for your vote in the August 28th school board primary. Thank you.
All right, so that is Jeff Larson, who's running for Pinellas County School Board District 2. That's a countywide seat. We're going to listen to two more candidates give their statements to us. The next candidate is also running for the Pinellas School Board.
Hello, I'm Lorena Grizzle, and I'm your District 6 candidate for school board. District 6 covers the South Beaches, Seminole, Pinellas Park, and parts of Northeast St. Petersburg. I'm running for office to offer my skills, expertise, and experience to this community where I grew up, worked, and raised my family. Most of my professional life has been in the very area a school board member is supposed to represent, teaching and learning. I'm a current special education teacher who has taught pre-K to 12th grade for 14 years in Pinellas County. I hold two master's degrees in areas I teach, one in reading and one in special education. I'm endorsed by the Florida Educators Association and two local teachers associations. I bring a depth of knowledge and experience necessary to evaluate programs and policies on the school board, including working with intensive reading programs, working with struggling students of varying exceptionalities, and working at an L300 school under state sanctions. I have served as a PTA board member and as a past president. As your school board member in District 6, I will ensure school safety. The number one issue for parents is I've canvassed door-to-door. My volunteer team and I have visited over 5,000 voters this summer, listening to your concerns. I will focus on learning, not testing. Let teachers teach critical thinking skills, not test preparation. I will increase early childhood education opportunities to close the achievement gap. I want to thank you today for listening and being informed voters. I ask for your vote for Lorena Grizzle for school board. Please visit my website at lorenagrizzle.com. And remember, no one knows the classroom like a teacher.
Well, that was Lorena Grizzle's message running for the Pinellas School Board District 6. Let's listen to one more candidate. This one is also running for the Pinellas School Board.
Hello, I'm Nicole, and I'm running for Pinellas County School Board because I care about our schools and I believe in their potential. I believe our kids deserve better schools, accountable spending, and safer schools. Serving Pinellas County School has been a big part of my life, and I believe a strong community needs a strong school system. Great teachers are what makes schools strong. My 20 years of experience as a teacher, school counselor, assistant principal, and program evaluator have shown me we must have a climate that values, not micromanages, our educators, so teaching can be a sustainable career option. I think before we spend money on programs and partnerships, it's important to first determine how effective they are. As a professional with a bachelor's, master's, and PhD in education, who's evaluated educational programs and policies, I will make sure programs work before we spend money on them. And as a mom, I want schools to be more than just tests. I believe we need to bring the joy back into education. Those who know me know that I ask tough questions to find solutions. I tell the truth, I work hard, and I stand up for what I believe in. Again, I'm Nicole Carr, running for seat 3 countywide, so I will be on your ballot if you vote in Pinellas County. I hope you'll remember that this car is driven to improve our schools. You can learn more about me and contact me with any questions through my website, NicoleCarr.com. Thank you.
Well, that was our final candidate for today, Nicole Carr, running for Pinellas School Board District 3. Again, WMNF is offering free airtime to any candidate who is on the ballot on August 28th. The place to record the candidate's message is 813-238-8001, extension 115. The candidates should do it in their own voice. All messages must be recorded by 9 a.m. August 21st. We encourage candidates to record their messages quickly. We have a limited number of days left in which to air the messages. Messages will be played on a first-come, first-served basis. No primary candidate's message will be played after 12 noon on Wednesday, August 22nd. And messages are airing right now. We'll air more Monday at about 11:30. Well, this is WMNF in Tampa. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Rob Lurie. We're going to open up the phone lines and talk about some items in the news. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And you can email us in the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. Well, right now, going on in Tampa at the Armature Works, there's a rally for gubernatorial candidate Andrew Gillum. He's a Democrat running for his party's nomination for governor, and he's bringing along with him Bernie Sanders. And I've seen some pictures of the crowd in the room. It looks like there might be 1,000 people in the room where Bernie Sanders is about to speak. It's at the Armature Works on the river, about a mile north of Kennedy Boulevard in Tampa, in the center part of Tampa. Gillum is the Democratic mayor of Tallahassee. He hopes that Bernie Sanders' visit today will help him in the five-person Democratic primary race. Later, they go on to Orlando to campaign. And so we're going to get a complete report from WMNF's Sean Canaan, who is at the Gillum Sanders event right now. And if you're there and you want to tell us what you're seeing, you can call us up, 813-239-9663. Well, there's an increased police presence at the Boston Globe newspaper's headquarters in Boston after a bomb threat was made against the newspaper yesterday in the wake of a tweet that was sent out by President Trump. While Boston police say they do not believe the threat was super serious, the FBI is conducting an investigation. In a campaign spearheaded by the newspaper, the Boston Globe, newspapers across the U.S. have opted to push back against Trump's attacks on so-called fake news, with a coordinated series of editorials speaking up for a free and vigorous press. About 350 newspapers are participating. Trump responded to the campaign yesterday morning, singling out the Boston Globe on Twitter. A resolution offered later in the day by a Democratic Senator Brian Schatz of Hawaii in the Senate drew on the words of Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, and President Reagan, among others, to champion the role of the free press, which it said is integral to democratic foundations of the U.S. About 800,000 people here in Florida have already cast ballots in the state's primary election. The Florida Division of Elections website says that so far more than 739,000 voters have mailed in their ballots, and more than 38,000 people have voted at early voting polling places around the state. And we can talk about that. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. The Defense Department says the Veterans Day military parade ordered by President Trump will not happen this year. A Pentagon spokesperson said that the military and the White House have now agreed to explore opportunities in 2019. The announcement that the big parade won't happen came several hours after the Associated Press reported that the parade would cost about $92 million. That's three times the price first suggested by the White House. So that parade won't happen this year. A big part of the cost of the parade would be to cover the Pentagon costs for aircraft, equipment, personnel, and other support for the proposed parade in Washington. And another big cost, security, to protect the parade. Well, Governor Rick Scott may have a conflict of interest over a new rail line in Florida after killing a high-speed rail project proposed by President Obama. Scott and his wife have invested in a fund that has links to a private company building a new high-speed rail line. Miami Herald reported yesterday that new disclosures show Scott and his wife have invested in a fund run by the parent company of All Aboard Florida. All Aboard is building a new rail line from Miami to Orlando, but recently expressed interest in extending the line to Tampa. Scott in 2011 rejected $2.4 billion in infrastructure money that the federal government offered the state to build a high-speed rail line from Orlando to Tampa. Well, former U.S. security officials issued a scathing rebuke to President Trump yesterday, admonishing him for yanking former CIA Chief John Brennan's security clearance in what they cast as an act of political vengeance. Trump said that he had to do something about the rigged federal probe of Russian election interference. Trump's admission that he acted out of frustration about the Russian investigation underscored his willingness to use his executive power to fight back against an investigation he sees as a direct threat to his presidency. Legal experts said the dispute may add to the evidence that's being reviewed right now by special counsel Robert Mueller. And again, if you want to comment about anything you heard here, you can call us up, 813-239-9663. More than 1,000 Google employees have signed a letter protesting the company's secretive plan to build a research engine that would comply with Chinese censorship rules. The letters call on Google executives to review ethics and transparency of the company. The letter says employees lack the information required to make ethically informed decisions about our work and complain that most employees at Google only found out about the project, nicknamed Dragonfly, through media reports. The letter from Google employees is similar to one that thousands of employees signed in protest of Project Maven. That's a U.S. military contract that Google decided in June not to renew. And again, if you want to call in, our phone number, 813-239-9663. And New York University is offering free tuition for all its medical students. The Wall Street Journal reports the move is a first among U.S. medical schools, major U.S. medical schools. Rising tuition and six-figure loans have been pushing new doctors into higher-paying fields and contributing to a shortage of researchers and primary care physicians. The associate dean for admissions at NYU says that there's a moral imperative to reduce student debt. Well, let's take some phone calls, and we're going to go to Susan first in St. Petersburg. Susan, you're on WMNF. What would you like to comment about?
The remark that you said that they weren't going to have the Veterans Parade.
Yeah.
Because it cost too much money. And I'm wondering why he couldn't get one of his people that are like $80 billion, pushing $100 billion. They could throw in a billion, and it would pay for it.
Yeah, the president, if the president is worth $10 billion, then he could pay for it.
Exactly. Oh, well, that was just my comment.
All right, Susan, thanks a lot. Do you think the parade is a good idea?
Parades are always fun. You know, it kind of brings the morale up and everything.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody pitched in and did it, I think everybody would be loving it.
Yeah. All right, Susan, thanks a lot. Thank you.
We have to add the taxes to it.
Okay? Yeah, you just don't want the taxpayers to pay for it.
No, exactly.
All right, Susan, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Good to hear from you. Let's go to Rex in St. Pete. Hi, Rex. You're on WMNF. And what in the news?
Oh, good morning, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Just want to comment a little bit real quickly and
see how you feel about Ricky Ricardo running for the Senate. I mean, Rick Scott. You know, the guy's ad campaign is like he's thumping his chest and says, look, when I go to Washington, I'm going to wave a magic wand and everybody's going to listen to me. And we know that's not how Washington works, but that's his whole ad campaign. I'm not a Washington insider, and he's not taking any responsibility for where he's taken us as a state over the last 8 years and blaming everything on Nelson. How do you feel about that?
Well, let me ask you, I think your point is an interesting one. That is that Rick Scott says he's an outsider. So do you think that he would do anything different than the Republican Congress and the Republican president have done already? Would he bring any new ideas to what they've been pushing, or would he pretty much step in line with President Trump and
the Congress? Oh, he'd be goose-stepping with them. There's absolutely no doubt.
So how does he claim he's an outsider?
Because he's got how many millions of dollars to advertise that he is.
Yeah.
That's all it is it's money.
Yeah, I know we've got a lot of Rick Scott supporters in our audience, so maybe they can call us and tell us.
Yeah, I'm hoping they can explain that to me because I'm dumbfounded.
All right, Rex, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you.
Okay, thanks, right. Rob.
And you're listening to 88.5 FM. In the next hour, Daniel Ruth will be here, so stick around for that. Daniel is, he and I were talking about potential topics, and he is just loaded for bear, as they say, this morning. So stick around. He's on fire, and he'll be here in just about a half an hour. Let's go to Rob in Winter Haven. Rob, you're on WMNF. What news item would you like to comment about?
I've just got a quick question about Rick Scott. He's invested heavily in a rail system from Miami to Orlando that wants to go to Tampa. And I'm just wondering when he knew, when he started his investment with that company, and if he's answered any questions about that, or is he just pleading the fifth?
Let me just read from Mary Ellen Class broke this story for the Tampa Bay Times and Miami Herald. I'll just read two paragraphs from it, and this gives us some idea. This is the story that's on the front page of the Tampa Bay Times today. Rick and Ann Scott are multimillionaires with an undisclosed amount of wealth. Fortress Investment Group is the parent company of Florida East Coast Industries, which owns All Aboard Florida. And I'll just jump to the inside. All Aboard Florida now operates as Brightline, the system of diesel electric trains that's been running between West Palm Beach and Fort Lauderdale since January and from West Palm Beach to Miami since May. In June, state officials announced that Brightline had put in a bid to build a high-speed rail link between Orlando and Tampa. Scott said the proposal was an exciting opportunity, and his goal is for the private sector to invest in this project. Scott's investment in Fortress Secured Lending Fund, the credit and lending division, produced at least $150,000 in income last year, according to Rick Scott's 2018 federal financial disclosure. He was required to file the report last month to run for U.S. Senate. So it looks like he was invested at least as of last year, before he said that this was an exciting opportunity. So,
I wonder if he was invested before he turned down the federal money.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, the thing about this Brightline project is it's very controversial on the East Coast because the trains aren't really high speed. They don't run above grade. They run at grade level. So they've been mowing down pedestrians and cars since it started running. And there's a lot of opposition on the East Coast, especially from, you're going to be baffled by this, by Republicans. Who don't like it on the East Coast. The idea over here, we haven't seen the plans yet, but if it runs at grade, there's always going to be that interaction between train and car or train and truck or train and pedestrian. And it's not a good thing. The idea for high-speed rail was that it would be separate and elevated. So in some of these news reports say that this is a new high-speed rail project. It's not going to be high-speed rail like we know in China and Japan. It's going to be more the American version that goes maybe 60, 70 miles an hour. It's not truly high-speed rail. So I think, you know, I think it's a good question. When did he invest in this company? Now, he says that his people say that he doesn't have anything to do with how his money is invested these days. They say over and over again, the governor has no control of what is bought or sold in his blind trust. So that's what the governor says.
No, but I'll bet his wife does, and I'll bet they talk at dinner.
Well, they might not talk about investments. Rob, I don't know. I don't know, but it's an important question, and I think we need to get the governor to answer directly.
Well, he'll just plead the fifth.
Yeah, he might. All right, Rob, thanks a lot. Great
have
to hear from
day.
You. All right. And let's go to Jill in St. Pete. Jill, what's on your mind?
Oh, a couple of different things. For one thing, the freedom of the press. You did mention a few things about the press today that is very important, that we get a lot of our information from the press. You mentioned the Google people. They found out what their management was doing to them from the press,
right.
From the media, from
right.
the press reports. The press is a very important part of information sharing in our country. When they're not just out there to get Trump, and I think Trump is being very paranoid in thinking that all the media is just out there to get him. I think that's a very paranoid position that he's taken. But I think that over and over again, we've shown that these press segments and this information sharing that is done through newspapers, radio, TV, is very important for people to get the information that they need in their everyday life. I'm glad that people are standing up for the press. I'm very sorry about that bomb threat. But that comes directly from the paranoia that's being put out by the president, which I'm very sad about. But when it comes also to Scott, one of the things that I was very impressed about his ad campaign, he talks about the poison in the water being Washington's fault. When I happen to know that he signed a bill okaying for the companies in Florida to dump into creeks, rivers, and streams in the state of Florida. That was signed by him. And he's going around in his ad saying that that's Washington's fault. It's Bill Nelson's fault. And that impressed me, too, as a complete lie. So I just wanted to say that.
Yeah,
we really need that press.
All right, Jill, thanks a lot. Thanks for that vote of confidence for the press. Thank you. We really need to get to the bottom of why these blooms, these algae blooms, are getting worse. And we need to get to the bottom of who's been the better steward of the environment. Whether it's a politician running for office in Tallahassee or a politician running for office in Washington, D.C., I think the environment is a really important issue. I think those of us that love the beaches or rely on tourism for our income or love fishing and see what's happening to the Southwest Coast and see what's happening to the Indian River watershed over on the East Coast, I think we're all very concerned about that, and we want stronger protection of the environment. Oftentimes when politicians say they want to undo government regulations, the very regulations that they're undoing or fighting against are environmental regulations. And Jill's point about the press is so important. I mean, think of all, you know, if you're conservative, you got to cheer the press too, I think. I mean, all the controversy involving Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky, those stories were broken largely by a Newsweek reporter, if I recall correctly, Michael Isikoff, who has done some other great reporting on other issues. But, there are over and over again, the scandals of Democrats and the scandals of Republicans have been outed by enterprising reporters, mainly at newspapers, although there's a lot of great reporters at TV stations, a few at radio stations. And I think we got to cheer on the press, and we got to make sure that their independence stays alive so they can do their job of watchdogging local government, state government, national government, and industry, and nonprofits. I mean, I think that's a really important role. Jill, thanks a lot. That's a great call. Let's go to, we're going to go to Andy in Dunedin. Andy, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. Happy Friday. Yeah, Scott, the election year environmentalist. You know, he doesn't put on the show until he's looking for your votes. I got to think the reason these blooms are getting bigger and lasting longer is from upstream towards Orlando, you just got more building and more sprawl and more sprawl and more St. Augustine grass. So you get higher concentrations of all this stuff coming downstream. So that doesn't help things. As far as Trump and his military parade, he went overseas and saw how they did it over there with Macron, and he just wants to be on the team that's
I wonder how the French feel about spending all their money on a Bastille Day parade. How do they feel about their government showing its military might and spending all that money? Are there many Frenchmen that think, wow, that's a vast waste of money?
Yeah, it would be nice to compare oranges to oranges and see how they do it. But for us to do it, I don't know, it just kind of makes me queasy. You know, it's just a way to round up support so we can go in and make our next invasion wherever we see fit. But Scott and Trump are just birds of a feather. Neither one of those fruits fall far from the tree. And as far as Trump, I mean, some good things did happen this week. The pushback against Trump for pulling the security clearance, that was good. The Pentagon pushing back for this ridiculous parade, that was good. NYU with the tuition, the free tuition, that was all good stuff, and it just smacks of everybody really pressing hard, you know, and with the Navy Admiral and all those individuals pushing back, it just kind of gives you the warm fuzzies inside, doesn't it?
All right, Andy, thanks a lot. Thanks.
Thanks,
and Andy mentioned the pollution and the red tide blooms at the start. Yesterday we had a scientist on who has studied red tide for the last 30 years, and he says that there is a direct connection between all the pollution we put into our fresh water, like Lake Okeechobee, and the red tide that we're seeing explode out there in the southwest, off the southwest coast in the Gulf of Mexico. So if you missed that interview yesterday, you can go on our archive, go to WMNF.org, and go to our archives and listen to yesterday's show with the scientist from the University of Miami. Jim in St. Pete writes, it occurs to me that the cost overruns that caused the cancellation of Trump's military parade in Washington this year is endemic to all weapons programs and purchases made by the Pentagon. If only such similar cost increases led to a reduction in or an end to those unnecessary weapons purchases and payments to private contractors, then perhaps we'd have more to spend here on the sick and the needy. Writes James. James, thanks for that. 813-239-9663. DeMarco writes this. How many cars have Rick Scott's trains hit, and why haven't we heard about it? If he scuttled the public rail project so he could privately make money and is now sacrificing public safety for profit, this sounds very corrupt. He's already raised the levels of carcinogens allowed in Florida's water. If you're interested in the safety of this so-called new high-speed rail project, look up online. It's real easy to find stories about it. Look up All Aboard Florida and Brightline and look at citizen opposition. We've had a couple of the citizen groups on the air here on this show, on the 11 a.m. show Radioactivity, over the past year. And there are citizens who are up in arms over on the East Coast about the lack of safety on the All Aboard Brightline rail line. And it's not really high speed rail. It's slow. It's maybe 60 or 70 miles an hour for a while, but then it goes back down to a very slow speed when they're going through towns. Let's go to Kurt in Lakeland. Kurt, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. Hi. I wanted to make a point. I actually was thinking about this experience this morning. I was watching a little bit of TV at the gym, and two topics that were had come up was a husband had murdered his or allegedly murdered his wife's children, and then the other topic that had come up was about the scandal that had broke loose about the priests and the sexual abuse scandal. Anyway, the point I get to is that these things are really heartbreaking, and it's hard for me to watch the news when things like this happen, but there wasn't a second where I questioned the validity of the reporting. And that was just the point I was going to make. And that's the point of the press, that, you know, I don't think anybody would under I don't think anyone could realize how invaluable the service of the Free Press is to report on any of these things. I think it's just germane to the situation to look at that scandal that broke loose. And if it not, had that not been for the Boston Globe and some of their reporting, it would never been uncovered. So, or maybe not uncovered not as quickly. Anyway, that's my comment.
Yeah, well, that's a great point. Kurt, thanks a lot. Thanks. And you know, when we in the press make mistakes, so we go on and correct it. And we try to correct it as quickly as we know we made a mistake. Newspapers are really good about this. The New York Times every day carries a whole section about corrections. Sometimes they're very small and trivial, getting a first name wrong or something like that. Sometimes they're pretty big. Now, they don't often correct in a way that we would like. I would say that I'm still waiting for the New York Times correction on weapons of mass destruction stories during the Iraq invasion, which was a terrible thing. But most of the time, newspapers correct themselves. When I listen to talk radio or when I watch Fox News, I don't see corrections. I don't hear the talk radio hosts say, you know what, in all humility, I made a mistake yesterday, and I'm going to correct it. You don't hear that on AM talk radio. You certainly don't hear it when you watch Fox News. Other news outlets are pretty public about their corrections. And I think, you know, when Alex Jones, who went on for months and months and months on InfoWars, pushing the conspiracy theory about the Newtown killings, and then only this week has done kind of a mea culpa about it. When did he actually print the correction to say, what did he get wrong? Because dozens of times Alex Jones said that the Newtown killings were a hoax. Dozens of times. So when did he actually print a correction about that to say specifically, when he said the Newtown killings were a hoax and that these were child actors and there were fake staged scenes at the Newtown school, when did he actually go point by point and go back and retract everything he said? I haven't seen that yet. I've seen him apologize and kind of get angry on his TV show that people are angry at him because he said that Newtown was a hoax. But I haven't really seen the correction where he point by point says, okay, this is what I got wrong, and this is what I got right. And I think that's the beauty of newspapers, is that they will tell you what they got wrong and what they got right. 813-239-9663. You are listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Patty Perkey and Frank Knox are busy behind the scenes making this show go, and we couldn't do it without them. Let's go to Kevin in Bradenton. Kevin, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. I got a question that maybe you or possibly one of the Rick Scott supporters can clarify. I apologize up front here. I wasn't in Florida when they had the opportunity to get the money from the feds for that high-speed rail. So if you could somehow, you know, just briefly explain to me how that was so simple for Scott to abandon and pull that, you know, the wool over the people's eyes, that that was such a good thing for the people of Florida to not accept that money. I mean, I guess it had something to do with the Obamacare and all that, but I never really could figure out exactly how he was able to do that.
Okay, well, let me tell you, and we'll have to look this up together, but back in, it was, I think, 2011 or so, President Obama announced that he wanted to put money into infrastructure. And one of the infrastructure projects he wanted to do in, I think, three or four states was to fund the startup of high-speed rail. Rick Scott looked at that and said, we're going to turn down that money because I don't think it's going to work. We're not going to be able to make it work. The premise of the money was it would be startup money to begin to build the rail system, and that there would be private operators who would bid to operate the system. It wouldn't be run by the government, although the government would build the infrastructure. And so Governor Scott claimed that there weren't any private companies that would step forward and bid for it. So he just rejected the money entirely. He didn't even wait to let the project out for a bid. He didn't even wait to say, well, let's see if there's any private companies out there. And in the ensuing weeks, several private companies stood up and said, we know how we can make money from this. If the state builds it, we can operate it, and we can make money for ourselves and for the state. So Rick Scott didn't even let the project proceed, didn't even open it up for bids, and rejected that money. And now, I don't know if you drive on I-4, but I-4 is much worse, and it was bad 8 years ago. It's much worse than it's ever been. Yeah, it's one of the most dangerous stretches of road in the country, and it takes it should take us, you know, a little bit more than an hour to get to Orlando, maybe a little bit more. Now, you know, some days if I drive to Orlando, it takes 2, 3, 4 hours. I pity Bernie Sanders and Andrew Gillum who are going to try to drive to Orlando right now. Hopefully they'll be able to make it in time for their Orlando campaign event. But the governor was so afraid of the project that he didn't even open it up for bids. And I think he at least owed it to the people to say, okay, if we can get the right bids and people, if private companies step forward, then we'll go ahead with the project. But if private companies don't step forward, then I'm going to reject the money. But he didn't even allow it to go that far.
But doesn't it seem a little odd then if he used that defense of not accepting the money and then now he's kind of tied to this Brightline thing where there is
I think that's
money.
Why it's on the front page of the Tampa Bay Times today, because it is very odd that he's going to try to make money off Brightline or All Aboard Florida. And this isn't even really high-speed rail. That's the crazy thing. It's at grade. It's not It's not going to be the kind of dream that all of us dream about, a fast way to get to Orlando if we have business in Orlando, if we want to go see a basketball game. Go ahead.
As somebody that didn't live in this state for a long time, and I used to live here, and then I came back, I really was hoping, you know, that things would be better than they are, obviously. But, you know, to see that this type of thing is something that, you know, the people wanted one thing probably. Rick Scott said no. It's no different than, you know, whether it's the medical marijuana bill that was passed and then the freaking Republicans.
And to your point is right. I went to huge demonstrations in downtown Tampa when Governor Scott was on the verge of turning down that money. And there were hundreds, if not thousands, of people protesting in downtown Tampa saying, take the money. We need the money for infrastructure. It was when we were still recovering from the recession. Unemployment was still high. It could have created lots of construction jobs and could have helped us get from here to Orlando much more quickly. And the governor, now infrastructure is popular in the Republican Party, but back in 2011, infrastructure was not popular.
Yeah. Right, because Obama was in there. You know, last thing I just want to say, I'm so hopeful that somehow this guy, this charlatan, this complete hypocrite doesn't, you know, wind up unseating Bill Nelson. Not that I think, you know, that Bill Nelson's perfect by no means. But I'm just going to leave you with one thing I read today on a lighter note. You know that the new James Bond is supposedly going to be this black man.
Idris Elba,
Elba. Yeah, and I was reading an article in The Guardian that Richard Spencer and the alt-right are totally upset about this. And Richard Spencer himself said that this is worse than a million immigrants on a flotilla landing on our shores.
Well, it's nice to hear that Richard Spencer is upset.
Exactly.
Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. All right, Kevin, thanks
a lot. I'll leave you with that.
All right, thanks a lot. Let's go to D in Largo. D, you're on WMNF.
Hi, Rob.
Hi, D.
I love your show.
Thank you.
And, okay. There's so many things. I don't know if you ever watched The View, but one of the newspapers in New York printed all the lies that Mr. Trump has said, and it took two full pages. And I do not understand why people are not, holding him accountable. You have usually checked two or three resources before you report something as a fact. He dreams them up and spits them out. And his cronies just hang on to him. And my brain cannot comprehend how these people are double downing behind him instead of saying, wait, I really don't tolerate liars in my life. I don't need untruth. I need the truth above all. And when the gentleman was talking about Scott and the speed rail, I'm actually in the transportation business. I have a private car service, sunshine chauffeur service, in Pinellas County. And when I heard about that speed rail coming, I was ecstatic because it would have done so much for us if you could get from Orlando to a spot in Pinellas County in 45 minutes, and then I could pick you up and take you to the beach and then take you back. So you could have spent the day, one day, have your hotel still in Orlando and came to Pinellas County, spent the day on our beautiful beaches, got back on that rail, and spent the night in one hotel and not had to spend any more money for an extra hotel.
I think because the Orlando airport is such a great airport and it flies to so many places, especially in Europe, I think the governor forgets how important European tourism is to this area. The tourists that come here from England and Germany and France and Ireland and the rest of Western Europe and Scandinavia, can you imagine how ecstatic they would be to fly into Orlando, be able to go to Disney World and then come down here for 3 or 4 days at a great beach? The governor clearly doesn't understand our economy if he thinks that high-speed rail was a bad idea.
Well, not only that, but I totally agree with you that it needs to be raised and high-speed. Putting a train track on the ground where people have to stop, you still are using the same lanes that are already available, that are already there. Could you imagine over Courtney Campbell, if there was a raised rail over Courtney Campbell or Howard Franklin, what that would do just to be able to get from even our Pinellas to Hillsborough? You know, it would be amazing. And I'm going to be quiet now because I could go on and on.
Well, we need leadership. We need leadership in public office and people to suggest that. Yeah, because as somebody that is on the road every day, you see it. But apparently our politicians haven't figured it out.
Well, one of the things that I am appealing to the masses is to get back to some fundamental just common sense of a lie is a lie and the truth is the truth and the truth will stand up. And all of these and attacking our newspapers as they're crumbling is my heart breaks. I mean, look at the dictators in Turkey and in Egypt and in Africa, the guys at the head who are controlling the news. Oh, and China and North Korea. And now...
Yeah.
And people are getting on board to let Trump do it here. I'm mortified.
All right,
Dee.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dee. Look at what dictators do when they take over. You know, we hear from our conservative friends, the NRA says, well, what dictators do when they take over is they round up the guns. No. Dictators don't round up the guns when they take over. The first thing they do when they take over is go after the press. That's the first thing they do. They don't go after the guns first. Some don't go after the guns at all because they want their supporters to have guns. Gina writes this, the race has been a conundrum for me, the Democratic gubernatorial race. All the candidates pretty much agree on most issues, which is fine. So vote for the candidate I really like the most or the one who has the best shot at winning, ? It is really important to me this state have some meaningful change in leadership. That means the current party GOP needs to go, writes Gina. That's her opinion. And then Doug in Clearwater writes, whoever the champion of the environment is, they failed. When the reefs die out in the Keys and the red tide is overtaking the bay here, we will realize the cost we pay now, can pay now, would have been worth it. Cleaning the environment is not a cost. It will cost you, but it is an investment in the future for us and future generations, writes Doug in Clearwater. And let's go to Kaylee in Zephyr Hills. Hi, Kaylee. You're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
There's kind of a general theme here to me of short-sightedness. you know, Rick Scott said no to rail, and I remember just being absolutely aghast at that. It just is so short-sighted, and he did the same thing with Medicaid expansion, and this is a state that has very limited Medicaid anyway, unless you're have gone through the entire disability process, as I have, or you are a mother with children, you don't get Medicaid in this state. And that's a terrible hardship for a lot of people. The Lake Okeechobee, the red tide, which I put in quotes, I really wonder if it's red tide that's causing this. I'm from Maine, so I grew up in a marine environment area. And we had a huge algal bloom one year. It happened a couple of times, actually. And we had these fish called pogies that just died en masse. And the effect on tourism was unbelievable. Literally, the chemicals released from these fish were so strong that some of the building owners down on the island said that paint was peeling off the building.
Wow.
It was, and I lived near the New Meadows River, which was also affected, and the stench, you just can't even believe. And the effect of tourism, especially on those two islands, fishing and tourism is their economy, and it was absolutely crippling.
And Kaylee, why do you doubt red tide is the problem?
Well, because I have not heard it associated with so many animal deaths and large animals like manatees and what I have
Red tide produces a toxin, and it's one of the strongest toxins on the planet. So
yeah.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it.
I just wondered the runoff from fertilizers, but I haven't heard anything said about climate change, and the bloom that I'm talking about in Maine was a result of a really strong heat spell in Maine. That they reached.
This topic came up yesterday when I had this research scientist, the biologist, on, and I asked him about climate change and red tide, and he said it's a small factor. It's a factor, but it's a smaller factor than is the runoff, the massive runoff. Yeah, he answered that question yesterday on the show.
Yeah, I caught part of it, but not all of it. He was an excellent speaker.
He's a great guy.
Well, that's good to know, but you know, I think that they're really missing the boat regardless.
And that's not to downplay the importance of climate change. I mean, climate change is still important. An important issue. But I don't know if we can tie it to the elongated, massive bloom that has killed. We're not just talking about millions of fish. We're talking about millions of pounds of fish and wildlife killed by this red tide.
It's devastating. Yeah. And, you know, other decisions that Scott has made and that the federal government has made or not made that they should have to protect tourism. It's like Maine. It's a huge factor in this state.
It's why most of us live here, because the outdoors are so beautiful and we want to preserve it. I think across the spectrum, everybody wants to preserve it. And the question is, who has been the best steward of the environment? Has Tallahassee done a good job over the last 20 years? Kaylee, thanks a lot.
All right, Rob.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Let's go to John in St. Pete. John, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say? Hey, John, we just have 30 seconds. Take it away. John?
Hey, it's actually Dylan.
Dylan, okay. Dylan, we have Dylan, 20 seconds now.
Okay, sure. Just wanted to say, hey, I wrote a paper on this my freshman year. It really incorporated Big Sugar, and one of the interesting parts was it focused a lot on the national treasure of the Everglades. And it's quite amazing what kind of factors come into play here. They have a certain type of moss that is like an algal mat that grows across. One thing I wanted to focus on was the growth of cattails. these cattails are indicator species for things like phosphates.
They really are. And Dylan, yes. I'm so sorry we're out of time. So sorry we're out of time. But cattails are an indication that there's too much fertilizer in the runoff. And thanks for making that point. Not your whole point, but thank you for getting through. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up, 813-238-8001, and record your comment on extension 115. And we'll play your comments back Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Now stay tuned for Daniel Ruth. He's coming up next, and he's got a lot on his mind. This is WMNF.